thank everyone for coming. My name is not Andy Cutchins, who happens to have been called up on the Hill to do some briefings, so it's not available. So I'm stepping in as a guest host, which is kind of appropriate because Taras hosted me about 4 weeks ago in Kiev on something that he was doing. Taras Kuzio just returned from Ukraine yesterday afternoon. So he has spent most of the last 3-4 months in Ukraine in the run up to the elections, the first round that took place, of course, this past Sunday. So he is in the perfect position, as usual, to tell us what's going on. What the last set of elections mean, and what it portends for the future. More importantly, and now that we officially know who the two finalists are, he's going to outline his views on what the differences are between the two main candidates. I have heard both in this town as well as Ukraine that there aren't that many differences between the two candidates other than style and clan interests. I've never believed whether that's really true or not, but in any case, it seems to me campaigns are here precisely to define the differences between the candidates, even if they agree on 80% of the issues, that is the real reason why we have elections. And, of course, in the United States, we all discovered this on Tuesday night, that campaigns do matter, candidates matter, and as well as their positions. Taras is prolific in his writings on the Ukrainian political scene, and I'm sure all of you are familiar with his writings, so I won't go through his background. He is currently at the University of Toronto, but not there most of this past semester, and will be returning to Ukraine this Sunday, is that right? And will be there through the second round scheduled for February 7th. So without further ado, Taras, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Ed. Before I go into this PowerPoint, which sort of goes into the various policy differences, what I'd like to do is to give a bit of a background on the elections and the first round. I won't go into too much into the last couple of years because I think pretty much we all know that Ukraine has been in perpetual political instability and elite infighting for the last 3 years. What it's crucial, I think, to say, though, is that Tymoshenko is in a kind of a unique position for the first time ever in Ukraine in trying to seek election as president as a sitting prime minister. In 1994 and 2004, former prime ministers were elected presidents, which is, of course, far more easier. And she's not only a sitting prime minister, but she's a sitting prime minister in the worst global economic crisis since the 30s. So this would be very much of a coup if she was to win, considering it's not exactly a very opportune base from which to try and be re-elected. At the same time, this is undoubtedly, without any exaggeration, a cliffhanger. I do not know, and I don't think anybody knows, who will win on the 7th of February. I think it really is 50-50 chance on both, but let's go through some of that. In the first round, it was no surprise that Yanukovych was going to come first and Tymoshenko second. The thing we were looking for was the gap between them, and it's about 10%, which is not bad, but it's not great. It's sort of somewhere there. 5% gap would have been great for Tymoshenko. A 15% gap would have been terrible for Tymoshenko. So a 10% gap is something that she can overcome, but it's still a difficult one. And it's certainly not a knockout for Yanukovych. Yanukovych really wanted to have in the first round a knockout result, which would disillusion Tymoshenko voters, and then he could go on to win the second round. He's already acting as though he's won the second round, which is a mistake, as we know from Massachusetts. And as we know from England, Neil Kinnock did it before Tony Blair held a victory celebration before the election day, and he lost. The result, which was the unexpected result, was Tehipko coming in third at 13%, which was a very, very good result for him, considering he came very late into the elections and doesn't really have a kind of a political machine as such. Yatsenyuk, who started off far too early in the election campaign, was voted by Ukrainians as having done the worst election campaign in Ukraine's history, coming in at fourth. If they're going to teach how to do election campaigns, they would teach Yatsenyuk as the one how not to do. And you can blame a lot of that on him being forced to exchange Ukrainian for Russian political consultants in June of last year. Fifth, of course, Yushchenko, 5% vote, and I won't go into any others. So those are the sort of main ones, the top five. So no knockout for Yanukovych. Tymoshenko still has a chance because the gap isn't so great. What we have in effect, I think, is a very new phenomenon of a 20% middle class vote, which, if you add Yatsenyuk and Tehipko, this is basically what it is. The new Ukrainian middle class has shown its face for the first time ever. These are urban, educated, pro-Western, I would say, on the whole, pro-European people, often involved in business, but also maybe in the professions. And if you look at the spread of the votes, Tehipko and Yatsenyuk had the best spread across Ukraine. They were not regionally divided like the other candidates. Yushchenko's result is a terrible result, especially if you compare it to 1994, when Leni Kravchuk was able to get into the second round and get 44% of the vote after hyperinflation and total economic collapse. So, I mean, you have to put that into the context of that as well. The second round, if you look at the balance of forces going into the second round, if you add up the various people who come from different camps, and the so-called former orange camp is approximately 50 to 55%. Which is not surprising, that's where we've always seen it around that, versus approximately the Yanukovych camp of 40 to 45. Now, of course, this assumes everybody turns out to vote, which is a big question mark. Yanukovych has a problem in that he doesn't have very many additional voting resources for the second round, except for maybe the communist leader, Simonenko, because all of the candidates from third downwards, most of them are really orange candidates. Tymoshenko has her own vote, of course, 25%, plus potentially Yatsenyuk, Yushchenko, Gritsenko, and a big chunk of Tehipko's. Tehipko's vote is the most complicated because it's a mixture of former Yanukovych and former Yushchenko voters. And you could maybe even argue that Tehipko's 13% may have prevented Yanukovych from doing the knockout in the first round. So whoever funded his campaign, and the rumors are obviously that was Tymoshenko, did a very good job. I haven't got to that yet. The election results, and this is just sort of a background to this, because this is going to go into a very nitty-gritty comparison of Yanukovych and Tymoshenko. Just the election, state of Ukrainian democracy. One of the campaign messages of Yushchenko was to argue that he's brought democracy to Ukraine. And he talks about this particularly in terms of free elections and free media. That is true, but it doesn't go very deep into the subject of what is democracy. And various surveys before the elections, including IFES and Pew Associates and Ukrainian ones, showed that Ukrainian democracy is not in good health on the whole. There's widespread cynicism and disenchantment, particularly amongst the former orange voters. Many Ukrainians associate democracy with chaos, which is, you know, if Ukraine was like Russia, would lead to people voting for somebody with a strong hand, but they don't, so that's good. Voters, for the first time ever, began to offer their votes for sale on the internet this year. There's very low public trust in institutions, and every candidate, receives high negative ratings of distrust. Yushchenko's is a record high of 83% negative rating. Obviously, everybody's fed up with elite infighting. At the same time, we still have a respectable turnout of 68%, a little bit lower than usual in its early 70s. And as an American scholar who's in Kiev told me, the youth vote is declining in Ukraine, but it's still a lot better than America's, which is 50%, still higher than that. And you could argue that if you put the votes together, that the pro-European reform forces have won their fifth election since 2002, in terms of, if you add the votes together. But, of course, this time round, the sort of orange side was very much divided amongst so many candidates, particularly in Western Ukraine. I'll just quickly go into Tihipko and Yatsenyuk, and then we'll go into this question. Because I think Tihipko and Yatsenyuk are very, very important new phenomena. As I say, maybe this is a new yuppie vote in Ukraine, new middle-class vote. Certainly the first time that the middle class in Ukraine was showed itself was in the Orange Revolution, when in Kiev, for example, it brought food, clothing, tents, and such like to the Orange Revolution, getting donated them free of charge, donated for other things like accommodation and taxi rides. So this is the second time it's shown itself in many ways in voter strength. And I think, of course, therefore, at the next presidential election in 5 years' time, this phenomenon will grow even more, which will be a threat to the established order of politicians. Yatsenyuk's voters are all ex-Orange, and therefore he has very little flexibility as to what he can say. I mean, he can say that he doesn't want to support, say, Tymoshenko, but really he has very little flexibility. His voters will either vote for her or stay at home. Tihipko voters are different. Two-thirds, I mentioned, were ex-Yanukovych, one-third ex-Orange, and therefore he has far more flexibility in, as it were, maneuvering between both Yanukovych and Tymoshenko as to what they're offering. Tymoshenko's offering him the position of Tihipko, the position of prime minister and half the cabinet, which is a pretty juicy offer, unless you're too scared to take up the position of prime minister during this global crisis, of course. But then you have to balance that in Ukraine, that if you don't go into politics now, and the elections are not held for the parliament until 2012, i.e. there's no pre-term elections, then your face will not be in Ukrainian politics. And that's a problem. If you don't enter politics now, elections are in 2 years' time, then you will not be invited to TV talk shows, you'll not get interviews, and you'll be ignored and maybe forgotten about by 2 years' time. So it's a risk not to actually take the offers on what's offered today, as it were. Okay, just on the regional factor. Usually central Ukraine is the swing region. I joke it's usually the Ohio of Ukraine. It was in 1994 and 2004. In both cases, it voted either for Kuchma or for Yushchenko, and they won. Because, again, Ukraine is very different to Georgia in that the presidential vote, the winner in the second round, only gets between about 52 and 56%. It's not a massive landslide like Saakashvili's in 2004. This year, West Ukraine is the key battleground, without any question. And this fracturization of the Orange camp was particularly severe in West Ukraine, where you had approximately six candidates from that Orange background. So I think you can put it in very simple terms that if their voters stay at home, Tymoshenko loses. If their voters come out and vote negatively against Yanukovych, she wins. I mean, I think it's simple as that, because the numbers are there, the 55 versus 45, Orange, non-Orange. She does have a problem in that central Ukraine voter turnout is very... I mean, the problem with disenchantment, disillusionment in the Orange Revolution and Yushchenko is that potentially is going to lead to lower turnout in Western Ukraine than in Eastern Ukraine, and that also will contribute to a Yanukovych victory. Yushchenko calling for people to stay at home indirectly gives Yanukovych the presidency. So maybe that's deliberate or not, or just sour grapes. I'll just, before we go to the this is the map of the elections. If you want to just you can just if I go over each I'm not going to go over each region, but you can see the kind of if you can read the Cyrillic red is Timoshenko, blue is Yanukovych. That's enough really for you to know. And green or a variation of green is going to be Tikhon or Yatsenyuk. Strange thing here we have in Transcarpathia, how the hell did Yanukovych get first place? That has to be because of, thank you, Viktor Baloga, election fraud. Because Viktor Baloga, who was Yushchenko's chief of staff, is working for Yanukovych in these elections, and he hopes to become governor of Transcarpathia. The turnout in Zakarpattia was extremely low, and that worked towards Yanukovych's first place. Very unusual in West Ukraine. You can see that the red is primarily Timoshenko first place. If it's very deep red, then she's got a very big election margin. Less, a more pinker version is less so. So, for example, Lviv is a key one. There, Yushchenko is in second place with 30%. Because Yushchenko regressed, I think, in these elections from, I would say, a more centrist patriotism of 5 years ago towards a more Galician anti-Russian nationalism in these elections. And that's why he only really got votes in Galicia. And these are, of course, the blue is all Yanukovych coming first place. In some cases, see, Tihipko's come, for example, Kharkiv there, very important oblast. Tihipko comes second place. So again, if Tihipko wasn't in the race, that vote could have potentially gone to Yanukovych. Of course, Donetsk, well, it's a bit of a progress from 5 years ago. It's not 105% for Yanukovych. But maybe there's still the second round, of course. Crimea is always a bit less for Yanukovych because the Crimean Tatars tend to vote for the orange vote. But Tihipko got 11% there as well. Kiev is always good for the orange forces. You can see Yanukovych came third there, even though the mayor of Kiev, as he's nicknamed Cosmo, was supporting Yanukovych.
Before you go to the comparison of the two candidates' positions, if I could ask you a question on Tihipko.
Yes.
Tihipko was of course, Yanukovych's campaign manager 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, this is obviously thought out ahead of time, that he was not going to come in first or second.
Right.
That what was the inspiration on Tihipko's part to want to run? And take, as you said, take a votes away from Yanukovych in the east and the south.
I think Tihipko's background is interesting in that, yes, he was the campaign manager for... In 2004, Yanukovych had two campaigns. He had the official campaign, which was headed by Tihipko, and then they had the dirty underground campaign headed by Andrei Kluyev and by Russian consultants, political advisors. The irony is that Tihipko portrayed himself as a Rambo figure, took his shirt off a lot in these elections. Yet it wasn't much of a Rambo 5 years ago because he ran from Ukraine after the second round when he saw that the Orange Revolution was taking place. So there is possibly bad blood in there between Yanukovych and Tihipko because he was deserted. Yanukovych was deserted by Tihipko then. And the third round on the 26th of December... The head of Yanukovych's campaign was Taras Chornovil. His background is similar to Viktor Pinchuk's, to Tihipko's, in the sense of I think he's from that group of people who made money from insider privatization and trading in the 90s, as opposed to combining that with Tony Soprano-style tactics, which is what most people think Renat Akhmetov was doing in the 1990s, i.e., it was more white-collar crime as opposed to that plus other things. And in the same way as Viktor Pinchuk left politics after the Orange Revolution, Tihipko did as well. And so they did actually put into practice this separation of business and politics. And Tihipko made a lot of money from selling the bank that he developed to a Swedish bank, Swedbank. He came back in 2008, if I'm not mistaken, as an advisor or as... the head of Council of Foreign Investors to the government. There's been a lot of rumors, which is impossible to verify, that he's a so-called technical candidate of Timoshenko's. I mean, he certainly did a good job of taking votes maybe away from Yanukovych. But he's also, I think, very much representative, like Yatsenyuk, of the widespread feeling that there's a need for a new face, as opposed to the old faces, which are Tymoshenko, Yanukovych, and Yushchenko. His background in politics is in the Dnipropetrovsk clan, i.e. Pinchuk's group. His positions previously have been head of the National Bank and Minister of Economics in the Yushchenko government, ironically when Tymoshenko was deputy prime minister in that government as well. He doesn't have a political base like Yatsenyuk. That's the problem he has. But if he was to be in government now, in the next 2 years, he could potentially build up that political base and then enter parliament in 2012. He's not as young as Yatsenyuk's only 35. He only turned 35 last year, whereas Dyipko's older. But certainly, he's regarded as a new face, and I think it would be very useful to portray them as both Dyipko and Yatsenyuk as that new aspiring middle class, if you want to call it that. Are there any other questions on this sort of background before I go into the comparison? I look at the comparison now, and I think this is important because a lot of the Western media, not a lot, but a big chunk of the Western media, and as Eddie was saying, people have been saying as well, that there's not really that much difference between them, between Tymoshenko and Yanukovych, and between the Party of Regions and her eponymous bloc. I think that's not true, particularly as you'll see on foreign policy issues. And also in terms of their background. But I think those views that you read in Western media and maybe in Ukraine are really a reflection of despondency in Ukrainian politicians in general, particularly the last 3 years, that they're just sort of squabbling amongst themselves while not taking much interest in the country. But I think there are differences. I mean, let's just look at, for example, the question of the political forces there. I mean, first of all, let's just put it on the table that there are no real political parties in Ukraine. I don't see any proper political parties. There are five countries in the Western world that work on a party-to-party basis with Ukraine, the United States, Sweden, Germany. Sorry, three, not five. There used to be a lot more. There are only three, Sweden, Germany, and the U.S. But you will not find a true political party in the Ukrainian parliament. And that's true of these as well. In terms of big business as well, there, of course, is big business in every political force in the Ukrainian parliament, including in the communists, by the way. But I think it would be true to say that Party of Regions is far more dominated by big business and oligarchs, and that's one of the criticisms that's thrown at Yanukovych in these elections very strongly, the degree to which he's in the throes or controlled by big business and oligarchs. I mean, approximately two-thirds or three-quarters of the big oligarchs in Ukraine have thrown their weight behind Yanukovych, not Tymoshenko. One reason is that they still, to some degree, fear Tymoshenko because the issue of separation of business and politics and what to do with oligarchs has not been resolved by Yushchenko. But also, I think in the Party of Regions, you have some very odious figures, ex-communists. You have a phenomenon which you've had in Russia where a lot of the ex-communist vote in Russia went from the communists to Putin's party. In Ukraine, it went from the communist party to the Party of Regions, particularly in Donetsk and Crimea. In the Crimea itself, the Party of Regions, as you will see later on, is allied to two Russian nationalists in the Crimean parliament, the Bloc for Yanukovych, is the Party of Regions and two extremist nationalist groups. And you do have, in both camps, ex-Kuchner supporters, with people in the Tymoshenko camp tend to be from the Social Democratic United Party. Personalities. Well, certainly, I think there are very different ones. I mean, the Western media is very biased in many ways, because when they talk about Tymoshenko, it's the only politician in Ukraine, they always bring up her involvement in energy corruption and energy trading in the mid-1990s. So though Yanukovych was not doing anything wrong in the 1990s, or Yushchenko even. But with Tymoshenko, that's always pointed out. At the same time, Tymoshenko did go into the opposition to Kuchma already in 1998, which is quite early on, far, far earlier than, say, Viktor Yushchenko. In various political formations, particularly with her own party, Batkivshina, Fatherland, from 1999. And I think she does have a good record, particularly in battling energy corruption. And the biggest source of corruption in Ukraine, as Ed will, I'm sure, tell you, is the whole question of energy corruption. She was the one involved in the Yushchenko government already in trying to deal with that. And at that stage, we were talking about $4 billion a year was being stolen, approximately. And that was clawed back and was used to repay arrears in pensions and wages. She was imprisoned, which I think certainly affected her personality very strongly. And then, of course, you have the whole period of the various opposition movements to Kuchma going through to the Orange Revolution. Yanukovych's background is very different. I mean, he sat twice in jail, some say three times, I won't go into that, but certainly twice in jail. And he was key to the rise of the oligarchs. When he was governor of Donetsk Oblast in that period of time, that's when the big businessmen in Donetsk, like Akhmetov, really became very super wealthy. He was on the Melnichenko tapes. He's seen as being behind election fraud in various elections, helping Kuchma and Kuchma's political forces to win in Donetsk region and to defeat the communists in that region. Similar to Timoshenko, has been twice as prime minister and has also come first, his party's come first in the last two parliamentary elections, but he has never really been able to form a coalition majority in parliament. One area that journalists never talk about, which I think is a key to understanding Yanukovych's mentality, is attitudes to 5 years ago. One of the problems that one of the legacies that Yushchenko's given us is that because there was no criminal charges launched for election fraud 5 years ago, nobody feels as though they've done anything wrong. There's been no accountability. So politicians have never been held to account for the events of 2004, including Yushchenko's poisoning. Yanukovych to this day keeps referring to the Orange Revolution as what they call in Russia and Ukraine political technology, i.e. a CIA conspiracy. That's a nutshell what they talk about. And that he was legally elected, the Supreme Court was a fraud, the decision of the Supreme Court. And he's actually said in December that because there was no prosecutions, then this proved that there was no election fraud. And I know this for some people might go a bit far, but I think for Yanukovych, this is a revenge. This is revenge for 5 years ago. This is proof that there was no election fraud, that he was duly elected 5 years ago. However obnoxious that could be. He actually talks about the very faint attempts to launch prosecutions in 2005 as political persecution. And the lack of criminal prosecutions from that period by Yushchenko, because he's throughout Yushchenko's 5 years, he's had really two dinosaurs as his prosecutor generals, Mr. Piskun and Mr. Medvedko, that has contributed to the feeling which we still have that the elites feel as though they're above the law. They continue to feel as though they're above the law. Of course, Timoshenko has a different background. I mean, she was very much involved in the Orange Revolution, supported Yushchenko 5 years ago, supported Kuchma's impeachment, supported prosecution for election fraud. And so I think that does show you, in some ways, a very different background. I think this is probably one of the most controversial areas, relationship to oligarchs. I mean, people do say there are oligarchs in Timoshenko's camp. There are Mr. Zhivago and Mr. Taruta. But these are certainly not dominant. They don't dominate Timoshenko and don't dominate the Timoshenko bloc, especially to the extent they do in the Party of Regions. And I think it would be true to say that no oligarch controls Timoshenko's daily or independent actions. That we just don't know to what degree that's true of Yanukovych, to what degree he's really independent of big business and oligarchs in the Party of Regions. Ironically, when the gas lobby took over the Party of Regions because of massive gas corruption from Rosukonergo between 06 and 09, that made Yanukovych more independent of the oligarchs because he could then have his own sources of finance and money, which was independent of Akhmetov and co. But with the closing down of Rosukonergo this year, that's made him go back to being dependent on the oligarchs. I mean, it is a strange phenomenon that Ukraine has very little oil, hardly any gas, no gold and diamonds, all unlike Russia, and yet the wealthiest man in Europe and Eurasia is a Ukrainian, Tatar, Akhmetov. I mean, how was that possible, that he's more wealthy than Deripaska in Russia? The question of separating business and politics is a very big pertinent question. One wonders which of the two political forces would be willing to go down that road. I somehow doubt it would happen under Yanukovych. Potentially it could happen under Timoshenko. The problem that the legacy of Yushchenko has given us is that there's been neither of the two options. We talked about this with Ed in December in Kiev. There's not been the bandits to prison slogan of 2004, i.e. people being criminal liable for corruption and insider trading in the 1990s. There's also been no amnesty either. So Ukraine's still in this grey no man's land. And so people like Akhmetov go into parliament because they're still afraid, potentially, and they get immunity. I think this point is a potentially important point, the diversification of the economy. I'm not an economist, but from what I'm reading, one of the main reasons Ukraine's economy has suffered so much from the global crisis is because of its overdependence on big business and raw material exports. And so that diversification of the economy beyond that is very, very key for Ukraine in the future. If these guys get in, would that really happen? I wonder less so. I would say less so. Social populism. The most abused word in Ukrainian politics is populism. And it's only ever applied to Timoshenko. If you looked around Kiev in the first round at the billboards, the first place for populist billboards was Yanukovych, second place Yushchenko, and Timoshenko's way, way down the list. My favorite Yushchenko billboard was, I will impose 20% tax on limos, yachts, and villas. Now, if that's not a populist billboard, I don't know what is. The most promises given by any candidate were certainly Yanukovych. Where all this money is going to come from, I have no idea. But he was promising everything under the sun in terms of socioeconomic. If Western journalists or academic scholars bother to read the programs of Ukrainian presidential candidates or political parties, they will see that all of the programs are pretty much populist to various degrees. Of course, they promise a lot but don't deliver. And they tend to also claim socioeconomic successes, like a lot of Yushchenko's billboards in these elections were claiming the successes of the Timoshenko government, which he had tried to undermine, made it even more strange. The promises, and the biggest, of course, populist impact on these elections was the vote by the Rada to adopt this law on increasing social payments, which led to the suspension of the fourth tranche of the IMF standby agreement. Well, that was not voted upon by Timoshenko bloc in parliament, and it was adopted by the Party of Regions and the communists, and ironically, Viktor Yushchenko refused to veto it and signed it into law. Nation building and history. As Americans, the Americans present at least, I think most people here are Americans, they will understand to what degree nation building and history is extremely important in developing a kind of united political community. And Yushchenko has certainly pursued that to a strong degree. Whether he's pursued it in the right manner is a separate question. But we shouldn't forget that these kind of nation building and state building policies have been in place in Ukraine since 1991, and they haven't really been interrupted by either of the previous presidents, either Kravchuk or Kuchma. I think that if Timoshenko wins, she would, and I think this point here, would be less personalize it than Yushchenko. I think one of Yushchenko's problems was that it's as though that's all he dealt with. I mean, the image in Ukraine, and I think some degree in the West, was of a president just fixated with the Ukrainian famine of 1933 and other historical issues, and neglecting to deal with contemporary issues. One of the criticisms that came out was, yes, we appreciate the tragedy of the famine of 70 years ago, but, you know, we have a global crisis. It's time you dealt with current issues and voters today, not those who have passed away. And that personalization created, of course, many problems with Russia today because the debunking and criticism of Joseph Stalin as a criminal came in contrast to Russia, where Joseph Stalin has been progressively rehabilitated in the last 4 or 5 years. In these areas, Tymoshenko and her faction have no real differences with Yushchenko. It's more a question of how you deal with it, not the substance of the issue. The most contentious is, of course, this one on the 1940s, the Nationalist Partisans, which again Yushchenko took to heart very strongly. In terms of these issues, the Yanukovych is far more pro-Russian than Kuchma was. And this gentleman here, Tabachnik, who would probably be in charge of education in any potentially pro-Yanukovych government, is really a throwback to the Soviet period in terms of his views of Ukrainian history. And, I mean, he's even written in one Russian newspaper last year that Galicians are not really real proper Ukrainians, which is a very Russian nationalist viewpoint, because they were corrupted by the Polish occupation. And so this, I think, this area could certainly change with the President Yanukovych, because they've been strong critics of the so-called nationalist bias in Ukrainian education. The Party of Regions didn't vote, for example, for the law on the Ukrainian famine in late 2006, which the socialists did at the time. And they have a very benign historical view of Russia. Yanukovych only a few days ago said, we should not blame Russia for the famine of 1933. Language policy. Of course, this is a very, very important issue in any democracy that's divided on language, whether it's Belgium, Canada, or Ukraine. And people get very het up by language. One of the mistakes in many ways of Yanukovych was to include support for Russian to become a second state language in his program. Now he's backtracking from it in his various media commentaries. But it's there in the program as it was in 2004. If there's one issue that potentially could lose him the election in West Ukraine in terms of people not staying at home but coming out to vote against him, it could be this policy, because, of course, this is a very big issue for West Ukrainians. The issue, and in this area, Tymoshenko is no real different from Yushchenko, except in terms of style, how you go about it. Should be more moderate in the way you go about it, as opposed to Yushchenko, who seemed to have come across as far more radical in this area. The Party of Regions has been very critical of things such as Ukrainization of TV and film, which is something that Yushchenko has brought in. Separatism in the Crimea, which I think is a very, very, again, a very important issue, and shows to what degree Yanukovych has moved away from the Ukrainian consensus. Because one of the things that Ukraine was built on the last 20 years was support for the status quo, the territorial status quo, because of the fear of Ukraine disintegrating and threats from neighbors towards its territories. In this area, there isn't really, again, much difference between Tymoshenko and Yushchenko. In 08, yes, Tymoshenko wasn't as radical in her support for Mikhail Saakashvili as Yushchenko was. At the same time, they voted against any support for separatism in Georgia, and they would never align themselves with Russian nationalists in the Crimea. The break here with the Ukrainian, consensus is that for the first time ever, the Party of Regions backed the independence of two regions in Georgia, backed separatism in Georgia. As I said on Ukraine television last Friday, the terrorist group Hamas, Nicaragua, and the Party of Regions voted to recognize the independence of South Ossetia and Abkhazia. Very strange development, to be quite honest, because even Lukashenko did not do this step. Nobody in the CIS, apart from Russia, of course, has supported the independence of South Ossetia and Abkhazia. Only the Party of Regions. And when Yanukovych has attempted to explain why, he keeps going back in a very clumsy way to the Kosovo issue, as though this Kosovo issue has something similar to this. Which, of course, it does not. But I think it goes back to this problem. In 2006 elections, the four Yanukovych bloc in the Crimean parliament allied itself with Russian nationalists, which gave them approximately three-quarters of the seats in the Crimean parliament, so they could adopt the resolution there. They tried to adopt a resolution in the Ukrainian parliament, but failed. So I think one of the questions that he keeps trying to dodge is, would he, as president of Ukraine, Yanukovych, officially support the independence of South Ossetia and Abkhazia? I think we're coming to sort of foreign policy issues, which are in some ways far easier to deal with in terms of differences. Party Regions has a cooperation agreement only with Putin's party, Unified Russia, not with any group in the European Parliament. Tymoshenko's party is the most active Ukrainian party in the European Parliament. On Monday of this week, the center-right EPP gave its official endorsement of Tymoshenko for the election campaign. Tymoshenko and Nemiria in particular, acting as her kind of unofficial foreign minister, have been very active in Brussels and Strasbourg the last three or four years. I think the Tymoshenko government could certainly, somebody's online here, the Tymoshenko government could certainly be credited with getting Ukraine into WTO. Is that from an intelligence agency or something?
Chinese
intelligence, right. Tymoshenko government, and that will lead to a very important development potentially this year or next year of the signing of this EU-Ukraine free trade zone, probably next year. I think this is a big question. Which of the two candidates would reset this trendy new word, reset the relationship between Ukraine and Brussels? Because there has been this Ukraine fatigue in Western Europe for the last two or three years. He's taken very few visits to Brussels, Strasbourg, Yanukovych, not really been that interested. And I think, you know, to what degree are the oligarchs in the Party of Regions really that interested in implementing all of the issues, particularly on issues of business transparency in the free trade zone? And would his election reset relations with the EU? I don't think as much. Energy and gas, Ed's field, certainly. And I think something maybe that Ed might come back to, but I think that here there is a very distinct difference. Particularly on the issue of gas consortiums, should Russia be in the gas consortium or not? A question of gas pipeline modernization, which Tymoshenko signed in March of last year with the EU, which Putin went crazy over. He talks about Russia being part of that. Rosukenergo, the view from the Party of Regions is yes, please. Any gas intermediaries, because it talks about it brings in a lot of money into the party. Tymoshenko actually mobilized 430 deputies in parliament in 07 to block the transfer of gas pipelines to anybody, leasing or renting or selling. Yanukovych has already talked about seeking to renegotiate the 2010 gas contract, which is something the EU certainly does not want to see, and a return to more kind of a gas subsidy relationship. I think he'd be very disappointed by Russia on that, and has even talked about Ukraine trying to get into the Nord Stream project, which I think is rather ridiculous. He'll never get in. So it just goes to show you to how simplistic, in some ways, that is. NATO. I think what is one of the surreal aspects of Ukrainian politics. Because although Yushchenko has raised and has become associated with pro-NATO sentiment, at the same time, he's never included the word NATO, never mind membership, but the word NATO has never appeared in any of Yushchenko's election programs, including this year's. It's never appeared in any of the programs of Our Ukraine either. So when we hear criticism of Tymoshenko that there's no NATO mentioned in her program, that's true, but all Ukrainian politicians and parties, traditionally in election campaigns, never put NATO in their programs. It's surprising on this occasion with Yushchenko because he surely would have known he couldn't get through to the second round. So why not include NATO in his program? The popularity of NATO membership hasn't really increased under Yushchenko in the last 4 or 5 years. It's still around 25%. One reason being is that government instability. You need a government in place for a long period of time to undertake educational work. And if that government keeps changing, that's not going to happen. One of the issues that led to Western Europe being very opposed to Ukraine going into NATO, getting a membership action plan, was just the constant political instability in the country. And of course, we have had a change of administration in America. And the Obama administration is far less in support of NATO enlargement than was Bush, particularly in 05, 06. So where do we go from here? Well, Tymoshenko, Yatsenyuk, and Yushchenko did sign the joint letter requesting a membership action plan. I think NATO is on the back burner if Tymoshenko is elected, but potentially there's the option of reviving it down the road. And certainly there's no problem with any cooperation with NATO under PFP. Here I would argue there's far more anti-NATO sentiment than there was even under Kuchma. Under Kuchma, you had very strong levels of cooperation with PFP and with the US and Britain on a one-to-one basis. And the first time that was disrupted was in 05-06, when you had anti-American, anti-NATO protests in the Crimea, organized by Yanukovych's allies in the Crimea. And that led to military maneuvers with Ukraine being curtailed. Now, to what degree, therefore, that would we have a revival of Kuchma-era cooperation even there? There's no pro-NATO wing of regions. So if Yanukovych wins the presidency on the 7th of February, the NATO membership issue is dead for Ukraine. There's no question about it. One of the first things he did when he was prime minister, he told Brussels that Ukraine was not interested in the map. So I think what we would say is that, yes, NATO's on the back burner because of these reasons up here, but potentially it could be revived down the road. Here, I think it would become a dead issue, the NATO membership. Relationship to Russia. One of the issues that's come up in the Western media in particular, and again in Ukraine, Yushchenko kept playing it up. Yushchenko kept arguing in the election campaign, the first round, that both Yanukovych and Tymoshenko are Moscow projects. If you look at surveys done by the BBC and the American government on the Russian media towards the Ukrainian election, they will tell you that Yanukovych was the one endorsed by the Russian media, not Tymoshenko, particularly in December, January. Now, what makes, I think, party regions and Yanukovych different is this question of separatism, of course. This problem that they have this contradiction. They want to join the free trade zone with the EU. At the same time, they talk about joining the customs union of a single economic space. Of course, you can't be in two customs unions at the same time, but this contradiction is very typical of them. As it is here, for example, on Black Sea Fleet, you want to have support Ukraine's neutrality, but you also want Sevastopol to become a long-term Black Sea Fleet base. You can't be neutral if you have a military base on your territory. This is the new development that Yanukovych keeps talking about supporting Medvedev's new proposals for a European Security Treaty. The horrible letters sent by Medvedev in August of last year against Yushchenko was supported by Yanukovych. This also is different to the Kuchma period. Kuchma did recognize to some degree that Russia was a potential threat to Ukraine's territorial integrity, and particularly Kuchma's secretaries of his National Security Council, people like Mr. Horbulin, Mr. Marchuk. This is a completely new development where they talk about Russia not being a threat, a very different psychological, I think, view of Russia, a far more benign view of Russia than there was even under Kuchma. That's one of the things that Yushchenko kept arguing about Tymoshenko. It's not true. Anyway, you would require a constitutional change to permit the Black Sea Fleet to have a permanent base. A separate question whether Russia would leave or not. That's a separate question. And I think this is one of the areas that Yushchenko fixated upon, because what Tymoshenko tried to find a niche for was to kind of fit in somewhere between what she regarded as the Russophile Yanukovych camp and the Russophobe Yushchenko camp. So some degree, therefore, to be pro-European, at the same time to have what the West Europeans have been demanding of Ukraine, to have at least some normal relationship with Russia on the energy question. But this is the kind of area that led Yushchenko to call her Putin's poodle. My view, therefore, to argue that there's no difference is wrong, because I think, and I'm no fan of Kuchma by any means, but if you go down this list on both sides and just compare the things across, they are very different. Yanukovych is far more pro-Russian than Kuchma. Now, you could argue that, well, he's saying this now, he may not implement a lot of this. Surely that's potentially true. But, for example, on issues such as Georgia, Kuchma launched the Guam Group Yanukovych has no interest in Guam. Kuchma exported arms to Georgia. That's something that Yanukovych has condemned Yushchenko doing. A whole host of issues here make them, I think, very, very different. On a final note, I'll just talk about potentially the political stability. And I think that if Tymoshenko wins the presidential elections, it's very likely that she will not support preterm elections because she doesn't really have any interest in having preterm elections. A, because she already has a coalition in parliament and therefore her own government, but also she's not sure to what degree she would gain in terms of numbers of seats. Yanukovych would therefore be the one pushing for preterm election because if he didn't, he could have a situation where his president, Tymoshenko, is still prime minister and she has a lot of power. And so we could see continued kind of conflict and stalemate. The big question mark, which I'm sure will come up here, is to what degree this will impact on things like constitutional reform, which are required. And that, I think, is a big open question. But I'll leave it at that and ask, are there any questions?
Thank you very much, Taras. I was... truly a very comprehensive discussion of both what the current political situation is as well as the differences that you see between the two candidates. We now have about half an hour or so for questions. Mm-hmm. Please identify yourself. A lot of people know each other, but we don't all. And before you ask your question, thank you.
Steve Larrabee, Rand. Karis, I wonder if we're asking the wrong question. I completely agree with you that there are significant differences between Yanukovych and Tymoshenko.
Right.
The issue then becomes, regardless of who becomes president, let's say for sake of argument it's Yanukovych, you still are likely to have Tymoshenko as prime minister, and you'll have a kind of stalemate cohabitation, and it seems to me a stalemated situation in which reform that's much needed doesn't get enacted and it's kind of blocked. Mm-hmm. So then the question becomes, how much does it matter who becomes president, especially since president powers have been significantly reduced? The prognosis looks like, and I hope I'm wrong, continued paralysis, stalemate, and lack of reform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is, I mean, you have to deal with the issue of constitutional reform. The problem with constitutional reform is that you require the two big political forces in parliament to reach some kind of compromise. And the time for compromise is really probably not now. I mean, if, for example, if we were to move to a full parliamentary system, why would Yanukovych support that? Because that would reduce his powers. And of course, Yanukovych might want to move towards a full presidential system, but why would Tymoshenko support that as well? So I think the constitutional issue is certainly key. One way could be maybe to say move towards a parliamentary system after the five-year term of Yanukovych is finished. And then at least he gets his 5 years. 5 years in, the constitutional issue is key. Tymoshenko talks about, and I think she's right. If you look at Western political scientists, she talks about the only stable system is either full presidentialism or full parliamentarism. Because at the moment, Ukraine has this semi-parliamentary system, which has the worst of both worlds. And to be honest, probably a parliamentary system would be good in one way, at least. It would prevent Ukraine having these terrible presidential elections when the country's on the verge of kind of, you know, this extreme conflict between candidates trying to become elected. Parliamentarism is also something that the East European countries, which have become successful democracies and EU and NATO members, have tended to adopt. But whether Ukraine will go down that direction is a big open question. I think parliamentarism has been in many ways discredited in Ukraine's eyes the last 4 or 5 years, not because of parliamentarism, but because of the kind of instability you've had. And so many candidates, such as Tehipko, argued that his election slogan was strong president, strong country. I think you're right. That would be certainly a potential problem of stalemate and continued paralysis if Yanukovych is elected. You could argue if Tymoshenko is elected, that would not be the case, because she would be both president and would have the government and parliamentary coalition. Now, the only threat there, some people have raised, is the question of to what degree this would be very democratic, you know, that all the power in the land would be, in effect, run by Tymoshenko. I think that's less of a threat than people claim, because if the Prime Minister is Tymoshenko, for example, he's not a party man. I mean, he's not a Tymoshenko puppet in that sense. So I don't think it's necessarily something that would lead to that. The problem as well in Ukraine has been with Yushchenko is that it's a question of the ability to use power effectively for reforms. Yushchenko was hopeless in doing that. I mean, he was the only president who worked under two constitutions, the Kuchma constitution of 05 and then from 06 under the new constitution. And there wasn't much difference between the two in terms of his ability to effect change. I think that with the lack of a political culture, which of course takes decades and generations to emerge, even in the Western democracy, of this ability to cohabit, as it were, work together, and to compromise, absent in Ukraine, then probably the best form, best hope for getting over paralysis would be then a Tymoshenko president, because she has her own coalition and government in. Now, if a Tymoshenko is elected president, that is the death of Viktor Yanukovych. We should understand that. That's what makes the election so bitter, particularly in the second round. What do I mean? Well, he will certainly be replaced as party leader. And he's lost too many elections. And the elites of the party unions must realize that he brings too much baggage. I mean, he's a person that generates negative voting against him. It also could potentially lead to the split up of the party regions with, if you have a situation where the president is Tymoshenko with her own coalition and government, many businessmen in the party regions will naturally veer towards Tymoshenko, because the mentality is to have a very good relationship with the authorities. And that game would potentially lead to a division in the party regions. I think.
Raz, if I could follow up on your last point and build on Steve's question, which I think has to do with when will Ukraine finally have a functioning government that can actually execute policy, whether we like them or not, execute policy of any sort. Whoever is elected president will have a short window where they honestly will have a popular mandate. It's the only person who's been elected by all the people of Ukraine. Surely there will be defections in the Rada to that camp, whoever happens to win, because as you just said, people like to be associated with people in authority who have goodies to give out, right? Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that, depending on who wins.
Well, I think that remember that after the Orange Revolution, Tymoshenko became prime minister in February 05, and she was voted through in parliament by, I think, 350, 330 votes. I forget exactly how many. That's obviously far more than the Orange vote, which means that a good chunk of the former regime's camp wanted to endear themselves to the new regime. And that would again happen here. I think it would be far more likely to happen if Yanukovych loses, because I think that Tymoshenko has far fewer big business people in her bloc, and B, I think she keeps a far stronger control over discipline over the faction. But certainly there's potential for defections from both, because in the absence of political parties, in the absence of ideologies, concrete, very strong ideologies, then businessmen are going to fluctuate between them. And there will be attempts to buy votes and buy deputies, as there was a couple of years ago when Yushchenko disbanded parliament. So certainly that's going to happen. The execution of policy, I mean, I think we can, and I think I did read one Western article saying this, we can argue that the removal of Viktor Yushchenko from the political scene will bring a sense of stability, because he has been the main agent of instability. If you read Anders Aslan's new book, How Ukraine Became a Market Economy and Democracy, he talks about how in 2008, particularly, after Tymoshenko's government came in, that every decision of her government was vetoed by Yushchenko. Every. It should go into the Guinness Book of Records. Not because he was against it, just out of pure spite. This is after Yushchenko demanded half of the government seats for his political force, and then he vetoes every government decision. So I think removal of Yushchenko will produce some semblance of stability, and maybe permit some execution of policy, but it depends. It depends on who is able to work with the coalition and government, which person's elected president, and to what degree the election result in the second round is a clear election victory. Because it's not going to be a massive landslide. I mean, whoever wins is going to win by 3-4% vote, a majority. And whoever wins, the other side is going to claim fraud. I don't think we're going to see a clear picture emerge until the end of February of who's really president.
Stanley Kober with the Cato Institute. I noticed in the way you were dividing the issues, the United States was not mentioned. You had attitudes toward NATO, toward EU, Russia, but not the United States so much. Okay, maybe I missed something. But even there, U.S. seems to be tied to NATO. And I had the sense that with Yushchenko, was he identified with the United States more? And does the collapse of support mean a disillusionment with the United States?
No. To some degree, Yushchenko was, but I think that was more in 05, 06. From 07, I think the Ukraine fatigue was also a reflection of Yushchenko fatigue. But I would say that the Ukrainian relationship to the U.S. today is one of trepidation, because the Ukrainians will always assume, as they did after 9/11, by the way, that any resetting of relations between the U.S. and Russia will be at their expense. And however ridiculous that might sound here in Washington, Ukrainians feared back in 01, 02 that the new Putin-Bush relationship, or today the new Obama-Medvedev relationship, will lead to the America consigning Ukraine to Russia's sphere of influence. So there's more on that issue. And I think because NATO is more on the back burner, the issue of NATO on the back burner, therefore the focus of Ukrainian foreign policy and elites is therefore more on Brussels today than on Washington. But I still think that the U.S. is there very strongly in the background. Ukraine security elites, those involved in national security issues, will always argue, and I think Steve here will back me up on this, that they see the U.S. As being a long-term friend, going back to the early 1990s, of Ukraine. They're just a bit cautious about this Obama resetting of relations, whatever that will mean. I mean, I think that when I explain to them that it's unlikely to really do much of a reset, nothing really to have a resetting of relations with any country, you need both sides to reset the relationship, and Russia's not really interested in resetting anything. I don't think that those fears of the Ukrainians will be really brought forward, but I think it's because we've had a change in administration, because you have a change in tone of the Obama administration, because NATO's less of a pertinent issue today than it was. I think all of those issues mean that if in 05, 06 it was America, NATO was up here, Brussels, EU was down here, now it's the other way around, I would say.
Andrew Behun from the Washington Group right now. Actually, I have two. One is a slight continuation of what you had raised also. and that is the U.S.-Ukrainian relationship. If we are in a situation, and we're beginning to look at the situation of the Russia-U.S. relationship as the reluctance on the part of Russia to go hell-bent on the reset concept, does that, in your view, particularly if Yulia Tymoshenko takes the ascendancy up here, is that, in your view, possibly an opportunity at this particular point to really put the U.S.-Ukrainian relationship at a slightly higher level than it is perceived by some to be at this particular point? That's one. Second, if we could take a look at the personalities, the leadership personalities of the two contenders at this point, Yanukovych and Tymoshenko, to what degree do you feel that the leaders, Tymoshenko, Yanukovych, will be acting independently versus, and in all, in setting the direction, in leading, frankly, in making decisions, regardless of what they are, on their more on their own than on a coterie of certain interests that are backing them up right now and certainly will be even more interested in backing them and controlling them in the case of a victory of one or the other? Thank you.
I think that Ukraine only gains from any resetting of relations between the U.S. and Western Europe and the U.S. and Russia. I don't think Ukraine is better off by when the U.S. has a very bad relationship with Europe and with Russia. At the same time, I don't believe that a resetting of relations between the U.S. and Russia or Ukraine and Russia will really happen to a great degree. Because, as I've just mentioned, Russia is not interested in resetting any relationship. And you need both sides to reset a relationship. Russia thinks all the problems are on America's side or on Ukraine's side. If you read Medvedev's letter from August of last year, any resetting has to be done by Ukraine, because Ukraine's been the problem, not Russia. And then when you have that kind of situation, it shows that Russia just really doesn't understand, the current Russian leadership doesn't understand what are the deep differences in opinion between both sides. So much of what Russia was critical of in the case of Yushchenko, for example, would continue to some degree under Yanukovych, but even more so under Tymoshenko. I mean, for example, the whole area, one of the big areas that Russia is very strongly critical of is how the issue of nation building in Ukraine, educational issues, how Ukraine relates to past historical events. That won't change. I mean, because that issue has been developing and emerging since the late 1980s. And one of my areas of research is the teaching of history in Ukraine schools, and I've been collecting school textbooks on history for the last 20 years from Ukraine. And so that issue, I can see from the school textbooks, is something that hasn't just emerged under Yushchenko. Now, of course, what riled, I think, the Russians very much in the case of Yushchenko was in some ways Yushchenko's duplicity, because Yushchenko was loudly beating the drum on issues such as the Ukrainian famine, as being genocide, on the 1940s, on Mazepa, and all these other contentious issues of history with Russia, but at the same time trying to get gas subsidies from Russia. So he's poking Putin in the eye, and then a few minutes later saying, any chance of any subsidies, Vlad? I mean, you know, and no wonder Putin was very, very angry and eventually said enough's enough, an end to gas subsidies. If Ukraine's not willing to play the ball like Lukashenko is on these kind of issues which are important to Russia, then it should be paying market prices. That was what Putin was arguing. And he was absolutely right, and this is where Tymoshenko's taken, to some degree, the gas contract this year and next year is towards that elimination of gas subsidies. But I don't think that, Russia's under delusionment. It's deluding itself if it thinks that with either of the two candidates who are elected, and I think more so with Tymoshenko, but even with Yanukovych, neither of them are going to become stooges. I mean, I would always argue that if Russia was unable to create a union with Lukashenko, it's not going to be able to create a union with anybody. And that's down to the fact that Russia doesn't understand the kind of state-building, nation-building issues which are taking place in these countries. even in the case of Belarus, where Lukashenko is basically a Soviet Belarusian nationalist. You know, he sees this as Belarus is one big kolkhoz for Lukashenko, one big collective farm. Eto moi kolkhoz. Keep your hands out. And so but Russia, I don't think Russia can get his head around that. So I don't think that, I think that the relationship in the case of Ukraine-Russia under both of the potential presidents, Tymoshenko, Yanukovych, will improve to some degree, but it won't improve to the degree Russia's maybe thinking. And on the case of the Yanukovych, some of the kind of things he's arguing, which is that if I get elected, then everything's back to hunky-dory, is obviously complete rubbish. I mean, it just won't, because the reality is reality on the ground. And Russia will not go back, for example, to the nice 2004 gas contract with Ukraine, where Ukraine was paying $50 for 1,000 cubic meters of gas, which all the other kind of gas subsidies. On the Tymoshenko-Yanukovych side, I think that, going back to this question of their differences, I think that Yanukovych is far less independent as an actor than Tymoshenko. I mean, I don't see the people around Tymoshenko constraining her. Could you see anybody constraining Tymoshenko?
No.
I mean, I just don't see sort of, you know, her being in the, under control of big business or any political force or some kind of Rasputin-type figure, whereas Yanukovych does have to deal with the fact that he's either in the enthrall to the gas lobby, as he was in the party regions, or to big business. I mean, those, you know, Akhmetov was his child, as it were, when he was governor of Donetsk. So they have a very close relationship. So I think it's a different background. And I also think you can't escape here the question of education. I mean, you know, he is educationally challenged, isn't he?
Let me ask you a question about the business support for Tymoshenko and the industrial union of Donbass mm-hmm. selling to Russian interests. Was that a business judgment on the part of Taruda or a political judgment?
You know, if I knew, do you think I'd tell you? I'd sell you the information. I'd send you an invoice after I told you the information. I don't know. What the, you know, as you well know, Ukrainian business is not very transparent and very opaque. So I really don't know. I think that what we tend to forget is that the Orange Revolution was a very peculiar event, because at the same time as you had anti-oligarch and anti-elite sentiment espoused on a continuous basis during the Orange Revolution, the oligarchs also supported both sides. And including in 2004, the Industrial Union of Donbass supported Yushchenko then. They moved basically from Yushchenko to Tymoshenko. Kolomoisky was also then supporting the Orange Revolution. Today he's supporting Yanukovych. And before that he moved to Yushchenko. So I think big business, a small group of big business is with Tymoshenko, but the big business on the whole is with Yanukovych. And the major reason is that they are afraid of her uncertainty. They just don't know what she's going to do. And she's the only one of the two that is continually espousing anti-oligarch rhetoric. And when I was at the Hyatt last Sunday during the press conference of Tymoshenko after elections closed, she kept being asked by journalists, Ukraine journalists, will she implement the slogan bandits to prison? As well as other issues, which Yushchenko's never done, like the Gongadze affair. Will she put in prison the organizers of the Gongadze murder? Which Yushchenko promised to do but didn't. So these are all unfinished business areas.
Her answer was?
Well, she's a good politician. She ducks the question. She says yes, but no, you know.
Would you address two issues? First, let's say the second round ends up with nobody winning a majority, with one or the other winning a plurality because a substantial number of people vote against all. And there are substantial, meaning substantiatable, if that is a word, accusations of significant voter fraud. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people stay home, so the participation rate goes down. So it's fewer people vote, significant reality of fraud, and nobody even wins a majority of the votes cast. What does that mean for sort of the dynamic of the politics of Ukraine in this year 2010? And second, sort of a broader philosophical issue, I mean, you, as you pointed out quite correctly, the country doesn't have real political parties. I'm unaware how in the world you can have a functioning parliamentary system of government without functioning political parties. If you have a situation, I mean, Ukraine has made enormous progress in things like free media, but it still doesn't have reasonable, real political parties. It's all about personalities. I mean, you have political parties that are named for the head of the party. That inevitably leads to a tendency towards a presidential system. And how do you get around that? I mean, frankly, I would think for a continental European country, other than France, it makes a lot more sense to have a parliamentary system of government if you can make it function. But that's a big if clause if you have political parties that are essentially the reflection of personalities and oligarchic interests. So how does Ukraine get around that if ever it can?
Well, in the second round, you don't need to have 50%. Whoever comes first. Whoever comes first. In the first round, you need to have 50% to win a clear, outright victory. In the second round, if you come first with 44%, then you win. I think one of the saddest things is this is the decline in trust in state institutions, because after the Orange Revolution, there was a tremendous boost in trust in state institutions in terms of popularity. And many people, a majority of Ukrainians came round to the view that free elections were possible in Ukraine. One of the saddest things of this election is that every side has been throwing accusations that the elections are going to be falsified. Every side has been throwing this around, which feeds into public perception that there are no free elections anymore in Ukraine. Something like over 60% of Ukrainians today, which is a throwback to the pre-Orange period, talk about Ukraine does not hold free elections. So that's a sad reflection of the Yushchenko era, which he's never, I don't think he quite understands that whole aspect. And voter turnout, it depends. I mean, one would assume that voter turnout would be higher in the second round, particularly if the negative vote comes out in West Ukraine. It all depends on whether the non-Tymoshenko orange vote sits at home or votes negatively in the second round. And voter turnout could certainly be a problem. Let's go back to this map. I mean, that is an example to me of election fraud. I have no way of proving it, but you know, how the hell can Yanukovych come first in any West Ukraine oblast? And the fact that Viktor Bologa's from there is a reflection of that. But if that kind of thing is repeated more, certainly there will be accusations of election fraud in Ukraine. But it's become, I mean, he's obviously doing that in such a way that it's very difficult to find proof. They've learnt to be very good at it. I was told by somebody from Transcarpathia this week that one way they do it is by pressurizing people who work for the authorities, i.e. doctors, nurses, school teachers, not to go out and vote, to reducing the voter turnout, and that would lead to Yanukovych coming first because many of those people would go and vote for orange candidates. So the voter turnout in Transcarpathia was just over above 50%, one of the lowest in Ukraine. And the lower the voter turnout, the more likely Yanukovych wins. Traditionally, Western and Central Ukraine, where civil society is stronger, has a higher turnout than East Ukraine. But that could change in these elections. It depends on whether, I think a big factor is whether your disenchantment as an orange voter from 5 years ago is greater than your fear of Yanukovych coming to power. I mean, really, it's, and I think that is why it's a cliffhanger, because if those people say, to hell with it, I don't like Tymoshenko, but the thought of Yanukovych coming to power is far worse, then I'm going to come out and vote, then she wins. But if they say, they're all the same, they're all a bunch of crooks, I don't want anything to do with him. I'm staying at home. Then he wins. You're right about parliamentary parties. I mean, one of the things that hasn't happened in the last 4 years is that parliamentarism in Ukraine hasn't led to the growth of parliamentary parties. You could argue that you need to do a parliamentary constitution, then presumably the parliamentary parties follow. You wouldn't maybe do the parties first and then parliamentarism. I mean, I don't know which comes first, the chicken or the egg. But certainly what you've had in the last 3 to 4 years is greater fragmentation of the left and right. I worked on a big Swedish project in August, September, looking at reviewing Sweden's party-to-party cooperation with Ukraine. And so I got into the nitty-gritty of the state of Ukrainian parties. It wasn't a pleasant sight, particularly as the Swedes have a very strong social democratic tradition, and they had no one to work with in Ukraine. The socialists were in total disarray after 06, 07. And on the center-right, it's even worse. I mean, Yushchenko's legacy for Ukraine is that the center-right's in total fragmentation. That's bad from the viewpoint of pro-reform, and it's also bad from the viewpoint of transatlantic integration, because that's the strongest base of support for democratic economic reforms and integration of Ukraine into the West is the center-right. Now, if that's in disarray, that's a bad sign for the country. To give you an example, Yushchenko's bloc in the Ukrainian parliament, Our Ukraine, came into parliament 3 years ago with 9 political parties in it. Today it has 14. It's one of the few growth areas of the Ukrainian economy. That was in December. It's probably gone up since then.
So it's a smaller base, more faction.
Well, it's probably the son of the father's created another party, or the lover of the wife. Free media, just quickly on free media. I've seen how free media works in Ukraine. We have to be careful. It's extremely... If you want to go in to have a press conference at Unian, if you want to go onto TV, nothing's free. It's big money. Big money. Multiple. Even to the extent, I have a blog on Ukrainska Pravda, and I never read the commentaries because they're horrible. But that, I was told, is because they're paid. Every party has paid people who go on the blogs, just write horrible things against you. Is that a free media? I don't know.
Hi, Lewis Medanek, the Open World Leadership Center at the Library of Congress. Thank you, Taras. This was really comprehensive, as always. This kind of question has been asked from the other side about the U.S.-Ukraine relations. But do you sense there was anything in the way that the West or Europe or the United States looked at Ukraine in the 2000s during the Yushchenko period that actually turned Yanukovych, if possible, more so pro-Russian in these elections? Of course, I remember the day before the presidential election last time, Putin came on down. They had that nice little thing on a little presentation, and it was clear the Russian influence on Yanukovych. Mm-hmm. This time, maybe not as much, but clearly Yanukovych, to me, might seem more pro-Russian, maybe because of the way the West acted towards Ukraine in the last, let's say, 8 years. During another administration, maybe, or something of that nature, and with the NATO and the integration and the map and the pushing it too hard, might have caused a backlash in a sense.
I don't see a backlash. I mean, I don't see anti-Americanism isn't something you see in Ukraine.
West, I don't say America. Maybe West.
Well, yeah, I mean, but no, I think the one of the major pitfalls of the Bush administration was that it undermined its own policy by invading Iraq, because the Iraqi invasion actually led to a decline in support for Ukraine's NATO membership in Ukraine, because Ukrainians, as do most people in that region of the world, associate America with NATO. So if America's in militarily in a country, then NATO's there. A big chunk of Ukrainians associated Iraq with NATO. And so that was one of the... But I think in 05, 06, the missed opportunity was more Ukraine's fault than America's. I mean, the door was wide open for Ukraine to get a map at Riga in November 06. And Ukraine had to just do a few little things. And Yushchenko couldn't come forward and do them. The elections were in March 06. If a coalition had been formed... and the Orange Forces won the elections, If the coalition had been formed in April, straight after the elections, President Bush was set to visit Ukraine in June, give his blessing, lobby Western Europe to say we have to support this, you know, pro-Western government and president, and Ukraine, I think, would have got a map, from what I understand, in Riga. Now, that didn't happen because primarily one reason, really, Yushchenko didn't want to see Tymoshenko come back as prime minister. And so the coalition negotiations dragged on till June. And Yushchenko had sent two emissaries out, one to do a coalition with the Party of Regions. That was Mr. Yakhanurov. Another emissary went out to Tymoshenko, and that was Roman Besmertny, to negotiate. So he was already negotiating two paths. And in June, it was a question. I remember that particularly that month because it was a World Cup. I was in Kiev, and it was, you know, 1 week people were talking it's going to be a regions, our Ukraine coalition, next week orange coalition. And that messed up President Bush's attempt or planned visit to Ukraine. He went to Budapest instead. And so the whole thing fell through, and then it became even worse progressively because Alexander Moroz defected right. to the Party of Regions, and surprisingly to everybody, it was Yanukovych who came in as prime minister in August. So it was a complete fiasco. And of course, then Yanukovych, a month after he came to power, went to Brussels and said, "Niet" to a map. So that was the end of it. And then from 07 onwards, Ukraine was undermined really by itself, by domestic, I think, instability and quarreling, and which gave the Germans particularly the greatest excuse to say, we can't let these guys in. They're not trying to increase numbers in terms of people supporting NATO membership. They're not making a concerted effort to deal with that problem. And there's just perpetual instability and political crisis in the country. And so the actual problems Ukraine was having domestically were a godsend to the critics in Western Europe who could use that against Ukraine. But that criticism from the West Europeans wasn't really there in 05, 06 because the Orange Revolution glow was still glowing, as it were. But by 07, 08, it was gone. And I think Yushchenko here is very much to blame, that he never understood the link between domestic and foreign policies, that the two things are so... For example, in December, there was an EU-Ukraine summit, and the EU again says, we need stable gas relationship with Russia so that there's not a repetition of the gas crisis of 09. We need you to come together and work together for reforms. Yushchenko nods his head, goes home, gets the baseball back out, spread over the head of Tymoshenko. Did he not understand that? It's not going to endear him to Brussels. He doesn't seem to understand that. So I think who's to blame? I think Ukrainians might throw the blame out to everybody else, the Russians or the Americans, but primarily the blame is themselves.
But do you think Yanukovych is necessarily maybe more pro-Russian?
No, I think his pro-Russianism is a product of where he was born, Donetsk. I mean, Kuchma's not from Donetsk. Crimea and Donetsk are the most pro-Russian regions of Ukraine. Remember that throughout, up until the mid-1990s, when opinion polls were done in the Crimea and Donetsk about what is your national identity, somewhere up to about a third of the people in both of those regions said they were Soviet. It's a very Soviet, Russified region. Kuchma is also from a different background. Kuchma belonged to the higher levels of the Soviet nomenklatura. I mean, he doesn't come from a working class background. Kuchma headed the world's biggest military industrial plant. He had a direct phone line to Brezhnev on his table. This is a very different background to Yanukovych. So I think Yanukovych's upbringing in that region, his background, maybe his lesser educational qualifications, those are the factors that feed into his views of Russia. Because I think it's a mistake when we kind of, you know, divide the country up into two chunks, because there's gradations. You know, if this is sort of Russian speaking, this for some reason works. Okay, there are gradations in this side and gradations on that side. I don't realize how this works.
You've got to make us listen.
Yeah, but you know, it there are different grades of pro-Russian. And there are different grades of pro-Western. It's not all one group.
Right. Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on the fact that you said, and we obviously all agree, that the fact that we don't know who's going to win in the second round reflects well on Ukraine's democratic development. Mm-hmm. However, you also mentioned that for the first time in Ukraine's history, Ukrainian citizens offered their votes for sale on the internet. Mm-hmm. And obviously that is a matter of concern and potential rollback. So I was wondering if you could comment on the evidence and scale of that.
Well, it wasn't massive. When I tried to go on the website last Sunday, I think, or Saturday, it was closed. The SBU, I think, security service had closed down the website. But I
so there wasn't an anecdotal evidence, like someone said it was an actual...
I haven't seen that. But I'm actually surprised at the high turnout, despite, even though there's such widespread disillusion. I think the worst kind of sign of it is the cynicism of the widespread cynicism, and one comedian did a very good sketch, which I can maybe find in a minute. Ukrainian comedian who pretended to be an election candidate and told the truth of what he's going to do.
Yeah. Yes.
He said, "I'm going to steal.
Yeah.
And I'm going to steal in dollars." Yeah. That's just the degree of cynicism that developed. So I think all of those various surveys and opinion polls done by Ukrainians and the West reflected that. But I think that this is a reflection of the fact that one of the major issues, and it's difficult to quantify this, is that the relationship between elites and citizens hasn't changed under Yushchenko. And the big hope in the Orange Revolution was that the elites and citizens would come closer together. And psychologically, the people felt that when there was the Maidan, the stage. Because this was the elites on the stage, and we're just before the stage. And we feel very close to them, that the gulf had been broken down. But then what happened was that really the relationship or the way the elites looked at the population didn't really change in the last 5 years. And the elites only really turned to the population during elections, whereas between elections they were unaccountable. They did their thing, we did our thing.
I actually think that the survey results show that the Ukrainian people get it and that they're not necessarily swayed easily by any of the candidates. But I want to get back to the comment that Lewis made. I think it's a very interesting question, and I don't know if anybody's analyzed, let's say, how we've reacted to Yushchenko or Yanukovych. I think the presumption is that we treated Yushchenko better than we have Yanukovych. I would not be surprised if a true analysis showed the opposite, and I'll only offer two sort of incidents that we found. When Yushchenko became prime minister under Kuchma, we tightened up. We said, okay, we're not going to do anything until you prove you can do X, Y, or Z, where beforehand it was like a free ride. And then under Yushchenko, when Yanukovych became prime minister, he came to Washington and signed the Millennium Challenge Agreement, which was a gift not yet deserved. So I think that was, from our perspective, was a very interesting, perhaps, signal. So just come.
Do the Ukrainian people get it? Yes, I think they do in one way, and I think I agree with you. I think the way you're explaining it, that the Ukrainian voters and citizens are far more savvy than elites take them to be. That is certainly true. At the same time, even a senior sociologist from Kiev said to me, who's from Ukraine, said to me, "I don't understand why people vote for Yanukovych." So, he has a twice prison record. He would never get anywhere in a Western democracy. So you have a discrepancy. They do get it. They are savvier than the elites make them out to be. But then a big chunk of them still vote for this, ex-con, who wouldn't even be allowed to vote if he came out of prison in America because of your federal law. Never mind stand for president. So I think it's a mixed picture, but then you could always say, well, Italians have hoped for Berlusconi.
That's your Italian half speaking now. Well, thank you very much, Taraz. We've come to the end of our time. I'm sure there may be some other questions by the audience, but maybe you can still stay behind for a few minutes. Mm-hmm, but please join me in thanking Taraz once again for informing us on Ukraine.
So for those who understand Ukrainian, here's the best video of the election. So it's the login one.
Okay, well. He's not
going to
complain about NBC.
I can play.
Perhaps it's on YouTube.
Yeah, it's probably on YouTube somewhere.